just for the scheduling note, two things to mention. Number one is, as I mentioned, I'm going to be out of town. I have a speaking engagement in Florida next Wednesday, so there's no shear. And also, just to make known to you, in case, or remind you, if you're not yet familiar or if you're considering, I start this Motzei Shabbos three successive Saturday nights where I'm giving a lecture series on both philosophical and halachic issues dealing with Kibbud Av V'Aim, of honoring our parents, both in terms of a general overview, which will be the first lecture this weekend, and then getting into some of the more unconventional relationships, whether it's adoptive, step-parents, in-laws, issues even relating, for example, to converts, and then in the final lecture, also discussing some unconventional and difficult and challenging situations when you don't have to listen to your parents, end-of-life questions, things such as that. So that's a lecture series that's going to begin this Motzei Shabbos. The first lecture is at the home of the Golden Hirshes, and in the bulletin and even on the flyers in the lobby are the details, and certainly everyone is invited to participate in that. Okay, I have more sheets. Anyone need more sheets? We have enough so far? Okay. Anyone else comes in, you let me know. Okay. So we are now up to what I have dubbed, I think maybe understating even, but certainly not overstating, is the question of the confrontation. You know, it's building up. You know, we know it's about to happen. We anticipate it. But, you know, I almost feel like if you can get yourself into the moment, so to speak, into the story, you know, you're just like, you're terrified for Rav and Chava. You know it's coming. You know, if you know, the music's in the background, you know, dun-dun-dun-dun. So the confrontation is very significant. And the way I would like to do it in the next year or two, it says divide up the next group of psukim, really the end of the parak, into number of sections. And I would call the two remaining sections that we have in the parak the confrontation and the punishments. Obviously, the punishments are the end of the confrontation, but I think for our purposes, we'll divide them up. And this week, and perhaps also the next class, which again is in 2 weeks, not next week, but the next two shiurim, will be about the confrontation itself. And I would say that the confrontation begins here, where we're up to on Pasuk Ches, and we'll read a little bit further. We'll see how far it goes. We won't get to all of them today, although I do hope to go through the first few psukim in depth tonight. So let's begin with Pasuk Ches. Again, we know that last week we saw how Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz HaDaas and had this impact on them, different explanations of why that was so, and how as a result they recognized their nakedness and even tied together some fig leaf clothing, and of course with my inimitable pictures from Eretz Yisrael, so now you have a better sense than you ever have of what that might have looked like. Okay, so then what happens next? Da-da-da-dum, here it comes. V'yishmu'u es kol Hashem Elokim mishalech v'gan. And they heard kol Hashem, the voice or the sound of Hashem, mishalech v'gan, walking in the garden. Ruach hayom, I guess if you wanted to translate that literally, means the spirit or the wind of the day. What does our scroll translate that as? The Ruach Hayom, so yeah, that's going to be, we'll see that, that's based on Rashi. Ruach Hayom is a euphemism for it's getting late in the day, it's evening time. The Yischabe Ha'adam, what a fascinating word. The Yischabe Ha'adam, the Ishto, Bipnei Hashem Elokim, Betoch Eitz Hagan. And the man, Adam, the Ishto, and his wife, Chava, they were Yischabe, they hid from Hashem. Where did they hide? Besoch Eitz Hagan, in the middle of the tree, in the gardens. Again, keep in mind questions. We'll read a few psukim, then we'll go back and try to see what kind of things bother us and what things need further analysis. Pasuk Ches, Yikra Hashem. So now they're hiding. Peekaboo. Yikra Hashem Elokim El Adam. Hashem, you know, so to speak, finds them. Are you in there? You know, Hashem calls to them. Yomer lo Ayeka. Where are you? Ayeka, where are you? Yomer Pasuk Yud Eskolcha Shamati Began. So Adam responds, I heard your voice in the garden, the ira, and I am afraid, ki erom anochi, because I am naked, the echave, and therefore I hid. Vayomer, Hashem responds, mi gidlecha, ki erom ata, who told you you're naked? Hamin ha'et, asher sivisicha, levilti achami menu, achalta? Could it be? No way, right? Could it be that you know this because you ate from the tree which I told you not to eat? So, of course, he responds in classic fashion, Yomer Adam, Adam says, Ha'isha, that woman. And again, here's this classic shifting blame. Asher nasata imadi, that you gave me. Right? It's not just the woman's fault, it's also God's fault. He nasnali, she's the one who gave me. Mina eitz v'ochel, she gave me from the tree, and I ate. V'yomer Hashem Elokim li'isha, Hashem says to Chava, Mazos sasis, what did you do? V'tomer ha'isha, she shifts the blame. Hanoch ha'shasiyani v'ochel, the snake tricked me, and therefore I ate. And now I think that's probably what I would consider for our purposes the end of that this section called the confrontation, because in the next pasuk we'll just read it to see the transition. Pasuk Yedalid, Hashem's interested in getting into a dialogue with the snake, he's just interested in punishing him. Vayomer, Hashem Elokim al hanachash, ki asisa azot, so he doesn't ask any questions. Because you did this, or atamei ba'alav ema, you'll be cursed. You'll have to go on your belly. You'll eat dirt. And then, of course, comes the punishment of Chava, and then comes the punishment of Adam, leading to the conclusion of the perek. So I would like to, so to speak, assume that the confrontation part ends before the punishment, which I'm calling through Pasuk Gimel. From Pasuk Ches to Yud Gimel, I see as an independent section. That's the dialogue between Hashem and Adam and Chava. Again, for all intents and purposes, if we didn't know better, we would think Hashem is, you know, in the investigatory stage, trying to find out what happened, what's going on. And Adam and Chava are trying to either hide or blame someone else or defend themselves. And then we get the next stage, which of course is Hashem's swift justice. So let's focus tonight in the Emirat Hashem on our next year. I think probably we'll take just two classes to do it on these 5-6 psukim, what I'm calling the confrontation. And again, for tonight's purposes, I really want to focus, I think, on the first three of those psukim. So let's begin and reread now the opening pasuk, Pasuk Ches. And now please tell me, what do you think? What's difficult about this pasuk? What do we need to analyze? So the pasuk again begins, Yishma'u, and they heard, Eskol Hashem Elokim, that they heard the voice or the sound of God, Mishalech Bagan, walking or traveling through the garden, L'ruach Hayom, at the end of the day, V'yishchaveh Adam, they hid, V'yishto, Pnei Hashem Elokim, B'soch Eitz Hagan. So let's start from the beginning of the pasuk. Anything bother you? Any questions that need to be asked? Any issues that need to be understood in the beginning of the pasuk?
One point of grammar.
Which is the beginning of the pasuk.
By Yishmu.
Right.
By Yishmu is lashon rabin. By Yishchaveh is lashon yachid.
Okay, but that's answerable because in the Yishmu it's not specified who's doing it, so they need to have it in plural to refer to both of them. In the Yishchaveh, the Torah then says specifically ha'adam. And then adds v'yishto. Now you could ask why, when it comes to the v'yish, what they heard, the Torah says generally, you know, in the Lashon Rabbim, but it's more third person, as opposed to regarding their hiding. Okay, grammatically, it works. It's not inconsistent because they're explicating who it is. So that's why it is a singular, because it's telling each one of them. But it is worth noting, although I don't have any answers for you, I didn't notice it really, but I'm glad you pointed it out, that when it comes to what they heard, they're just described in the third person. But when it comes to the fact that they hid, then we're talking about the record.
The idea of Kol Hashem.
Okay, so first of all, good. So first of all, what does Kol Hashem mean? I don't know what that means either, but it means something. Yeah. So Kol Hashem is there, but what's the next?
Okay, right. So
Hashem, look, we've seen the Hashem Elokim, and again, we know, right, the Lashon, you know, the Zerachimim, and there's Din, and perhaps that's going on here also. But I think the first thing that I was looking for, at least, and I, good. So I think what the two of you are saying, what you and me are saying, is that there seems to be an incongruence, right? But Kol is not Mishalech, right? Voice doesn't walk anywhere. What does that mean that the Kol was mishalech? So that's the question. So if that's a difficult concept to understand, then it's worth considering, is it possible that mishalech is modifying or describing somebody else? I would suggest in Venture that there are three options as to what mishalech means. It seems simple enough, but I think if you think about it, you could read the pasuk in three different ways. Seymour, what do you think? In three different ways, you could read the pasuk for mishalech describing. What is the first? The first option is the one that we're assuming. The voice. Somehow the voice was moving. The voice was on the move. The voice was traveling. That's so far. And we asked, you know, it's kind of a weird descriptive term. Mishalech is not what we usually say for a voice. Okay. What are two other possibilities? So one possibility, very good, or Aram slash Orchava, maybe even, maybe they were moving, right? Depends on how you, you know, it all depends on where you want to pause when you read the pasuk. Yishmu eskol Hashem Elokim, they heard Hashem's voice. Mishalech v'gan l'ruach hayom, while they were walking in the garden towards the end of the day. Maybe you want to break up the pasuk.
Grammatical problem with that.
Which is?
Mishalech v'gan
l'ruach hayom. Oh, okay, so maybe that's why it refers only to Adam. Okay, good. Fine, good.
But
in theory, now what's the third option, though? Let's just 1 second. Good. Right. So then you get a different problem. Good. So, but I think we at least got all three of the options out of the table. We'll have to see the partnership. Again, you can read the pasuk. He's referring to the coal, Hashem, the focus on the coal. You can, in theory, although this is maybe a little bit more difficult, but in theory you could slip in Adam and Chava into that. Or maybe you mean it's, so to speak, God himself. It's not his voice, but he himself. So to speak, traveling. You know, he's walking the beach, looking for them.
The West would offer a fourth, and they call it they translate it manifesting.
Okay, good. So that's going to be. I think we'll see that based on Ramban, but that's not something that anyone would otherwise imagine from the pasuk itself. We'll have to see. Okay, so that's good. So the first question, really, about this pasuk, I think the main, which we'll spend a good deal of time to look at, is. What it was mishalech, and depending on what was mishalech, obviously it'll either be easier to understand why that verb is used, or it'll be more difficult. And of course, depending on we may solve that problem by, let's say, focusing on an individual, even whether it's God Kaviyachol or Adam Chava. But then we may have more difficult. Then we get different problems of grammatical consistency. But that's the first issue which needs to be understood. And I think there's some valuable lesson to studying that question. Any other issues from this pasuk? Right, why do we care? What's going on in terms of the evening? Good. I think that's a reasonable question. What else? I could be there's other things. I'm thinking of at least one more thing. So what's the, oh, good. So eight, this is not the Harry, you would pick up on it. Eight is singular, right? So is eight referring to one tree? If it's one tree, which tree?
Hiding inside of a tree.
Right, and if you mean that he's hiding, and if you wanted to use that he's hiding amongst the trees, would be, but atzei is the plural for tree, right? So that's again. Okay, good. So we'll have good. So that's based on a portion. But again, just reading the pasukim, like these are any other questions before we try to see what some answers are. Good. So let. Well, you'll see Mefarshim are going to give us some other examples. Okay, so let's take a look at Rashi. Let's start, of course, as always, with Rashi. What does Rashi tell us? Right in the beginning of the pasuk. Yishmu, it's interesting. This is actually a very famous Rashi, just so you should know, because this is one of the rare places that Rashi, so to speak, it gets self-reflective and tells you about his methodology. Right. When if you're learning, like, what is the shita of Parshanut of Rashi Ramban, and this is an important Rashi. Others may disagree with his own self description. It's always important to know how someone perceives themselves. So look at this Rashi. It doesn't relate to our pasuk directly, but he uses. It's interesting that this is the first time in three prakim into the Torah that the Rashi decides to tell us this. Yesh midrashi agada rabim. There are a lot of different midrashim, agadic sources on this pasuk. And our rabbis, our chazal, have already arranged them, Bereshis Rabbah, Ubishra Midrashos, in the most classic source of Midrashim, Bereshis Rabbah, and other Midrashim. Vani lo basi, says Rashi, El of Shutel Shal Mikra. So I am only coming to go Pshat. Again, Pshat as he apparently would define it. We know other Mefarshim are very critical of Rashi because they don't think that he keeps to the Pshat. And the truth is, whether it's this or almost every Rashi in the Torah is quoting a Medrash. So, right, Eben Ezra, Rashbam, for example, they don't like this. But Rashi's self-perception, and perhaps this is not our topic at all, but gets to how he defines what Pshat means. Rashi says, Ani labasi el pshuto shel mekra. I am coming for the famous Pshat. Dabar dabar al opanav. To explain each word in its proper framework, let's say. Uba mashmo, and what its correct meaning is. So now, with that, so to speak, introductory, foray. Now he tells us. Let's get to the specifics. Shamu es kol hakadosh baruch hu. What does this mean when we say that what was moving? They heard the voice of Hashem. Shahaya mishalech began. That was going into the that was so to speak, walking in the garden. Now Rashi really is not doing anything in this case other than, it's interesting with all his introduction, he's not doing anything other than quoting a Medrash. If you take a look at the first source on the sheet, the Bereishis Rabba tells us, V'yishmu es kol Hashem elokim etalech began l'ruach hayom, amar Rav Chalfon. What do we see from here? Shamanu sheyesh hiluch lakol. That the verb hiluch is appropriate to be used with regard to sound or a voice. Shne'amar, as our pasuk teaches us, the yishmu es kol Hashem elokim mishalech began. So we sometimes, what's the English idiom that's most closely approximates to this? Sound travels, right? So that's exactly, so this Rashi, and this Medrash certainly says that. Now it's interesting, it sounds to me that was what Rashi means also, but there is a little bit of a debate within the Rashi itself. We know, I've mentioned this before, that there's a whole, what I call the cottage industry, of not Mefarshei Torah, but Mefarshei Rashi. People who were commenting on Rashi, what's known in English as supra commentators. So, two of the classics are the Maharal and his Gur Aryeh. Again, that's not a commentary on Chumash, it's a commentary on Rashi. And then there's another one, the Lavush, Rav Yaffe, who is more well-known, frankly, I guess, perhaps as his work on Shulchan Aruch. I think I've mentioned to you, he's almost a tragic figure in Jewish history, because he was a contemporary, more or less, of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, and he wanted to write the Shulchan Aruch, so to speak. And what happened? The holy Jew of Tzfar, Yisachar, beat him to the punch. New and the Ramah has his Ashkenazic gloss. He timing is everything. Even in our Bavli Torah. So he published his work, which is as comprehensive as the Shulchan Aruch, called the Levush, and there's many, many volumes and stuff. And later Poskim sometimes quote him, but he never made it. Most people have never heard of him, let alone learned it. And he writes about it in his introduction. He's working on it. Here comes the Shulchan Aruch. So he also, again, all of his works from Mordechai Yaffe are under this terminology of the Lavush. And he has also a commentary on Rashi known as the Lavush HaOra. So let's take a look at the Maharal here, source number two. How does he understand it? It's hard for me to understand how he reads this in Rashi so much as just in theory how he reads it into the Pasuk. Says the Maharal, Pirish, Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaYim Es HaLech Began. Not that the sound carried. God was, whatever this means, God was walking the beat. God was walking through the garden. What's his diuk? It's from Rashi. Why? Because look again, what was the language of Rashi? The language of Rashi was, at the end of the Rashi, Shimu es kol HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They heard, again, Rashi does use the word kol, the voice, but then Rashi says, doesn't just say, comma, quote unquote, Mishalech Bagan, but rather, Shahaya Mishalech Bagan. That it was traveling or walking in the garden. Says the Maharal, back on the source sheet. Im lo hosef shahaya, if Rashi, again, it's not the pasuk, there's no haya in the pasuk. If Rashi had not added the word shahaya, haya pirish hakol mishalik, then it would have been clear that Rashi meant the voice was traveling in the garden, the voice was heard. Velo shaykh al kol mishalik. But now that Rashi has v'haya, it's because he had a problem. Says the Maharal that the term mishalik does not work with something as abstract as sound or a voice. Rather, to use the term holech would work. That is meaning the voice or the sound travels. Aval mishalech, shehu loshon mispael, lo shayach rak al nisha holech me asmo uber tsono. That says the Maharal grammatically, that form, that conjugation alludes to something that is moving on its own power. Not something that, you or I said, and it's a product of us, and through our force, our energy, is just, so to speak, carrying. Ubakol, lo yitachein lamarking, says the Maharal, it can't be referring to kol, because that can't work with the word mishalech. And therefore, Rashi has the word shahaya, that it was, and again, I'm a little bit baffled by why that haya makes such a big deal, but the upshot of the Maharal, even within the opinion of Rashi, even though Rashi doesn't use the word kol, the Maharal reads Rashi as very much, you put that like in a lighter font.
He does use
kol. Yes, but the Maharal kind of, the way he reads Rashi is it's like, you bold all the other words in Rashi, but the haya. You wipe that out a little bit. In other words, kol Hashem is a euphemism for Hashem himself. And again, I'm not sure if it's the correct shot in Rashi or not. We'll see in a moment that the Lavush argues strenuously against him. But the imagery I find very fascinating. It wasn't just like God was somewhere far away and called out, Adam, where are you? Hashem, you know, you got a job to do it yourself, so to speak. You know, you're really upset, you can imagine this kavyachol with like a human being, let alone a father or something, you know, stomping around the house looking, you know, as I say, like in, I have this image of like, you know, the policeman walking the beat or the, you know, the investigative detective, you know, looking around, where are they? It says, Hashem was walking around until he could find them. It's an interesting, very interesting image. Now, the truth is, as I said, the Rashi himself, and again, the Medrash, which Rashi seems to be based on, seems to be explicit that it's referring to the kol. And in fact, the Levush, in the second and the third source here on Yerushik, he in fact defends that position and is very critical of the Maharal. I don't know if here there's any real experts in Diktuk. I don't consider myself one. But the Levush begins with this is one of the great lines. If you have a highlighter, you want to highlight this. A great line that Levush says. He quotes the Maharal, the Guri Aryeh, he says, Mi hu hanavi asher higilo azeh. Who told him that? You know, what prophet? You know, where did he get that from? Who dropped a baskol on him to let him know this new rule that he seemed to have made up out of thin air? Who said this halach can't refer to a voice? Who said? The Maharal said. Who told him that? And therefore, he rejects it. He says, yes, we have to understand Rashi or the Medrash simply. Al kain ani omer devadai mila sama halach. Love Kai Allah Kaddish Baruch Hu. Of course it's not talking about Hashem. How can Hashem walk anywhere? Rak Al HaKol, it's referring to the voice, and the voice is carrying. Why? He says it again, he adds his own little grammatical or, you know, etymological twist. He says, Aval HaKol Hu Dabar Nivra. He says, this term of Misaleh, that focuses on things, unlike, literally, exactly opposite of Maharal. Maharal said it needs to be something that has independent force. So Lavush, Misaleh refers to something that's created, the byproduct of something else. Love no fail, Lashon Halicha. And therefore, because it was Hashem's voice, the voice of the kol, and again, that, you and I never heard it, but certainly we believe that there were people in history, Adam, I guess, being the first, and Chava the first, there is such a thing as the voice of God, right? And they heard it. That's what they heard. It wasn't God prancing around the garden looking up, you know, turning up stones. It was a voice coming from wherever Hashem comes from, and that voice literally carried, meaning it's a different image. Not that Hashem's prancing around, but how the voice, so to speak, carried, and basically no matter where they were, because again, remember, they're trying to hide, so they couldn't hide. We don't know, we'll see in a moment some of our talk about what do they think they could hide from Hashem, you know, his eyes, so to speak. But here, at least, we have a different notion of, so to speak, you know, they couldn't hide from the voice. You know, it's, we all know this. I hate to say, sometimes even adults or spouses do it to each other, but certainly children from their parents. You know, they're in the room and the parents calling them, you know, come clear off the table or dinner time, and what do? You make like you didn't hear. Oh, right. You know, oh, I couldn't hear you. The music was on loud. You know, so Adam and Chava, like, in case you thought they were going to, so to speak, pretend, you know, turn down the volume. I didn't hear you, God. So, you know, it's called Hashem Mishaleh. It was carrying. The voice went everywhere. There was no way they would not be able to hear Hashem. Yes.
Oh, it's not referring to specific words, I assume.
Why not? Ayaka.
I mean, okay. Ayaka. I thought I was going to ask you. Is it referring then to Ayaka because...
I think. I don't know what else it would be. What? We have no record of anything else. He didn't say, you know, how's the weather down there? Ayaka.
It would seem superfluous if the thrust is to for Hashem to address them.
Again, because I think.
What does this whole notion?
I'll tell you why. The Torah. There's two things. The Torah clearly went out of its way, even though we don't understand it, and talk about it irrationally. The Torah goes out of its way. It's important for us to know, not only that it happened, but it's important for us to know Adam and Chava were hiding. That's number one. Right? The Torah goes out of its way to tell us that, and that's the continuation of.
And they thought they could hide from us.
We'll see. Whatever that means, yes. And number two, so I, given that, it seems clear, according to this, I think whether you say it's Hashem Kavyachal himself walking, or so to speak, his voice traveling, again, I think the image, whatever this, I've tried to, so to speak, embellish both versions, but either whichever image you imagine, there's a certain common denominator, which the Torah clearly wants, so to speak, to give over to us, which to me it's conveyed very vividly, is the notion of Hashem pursuing them. There was a certain... Again, it's a different thing than kind of, you know, more laissez-faire, laid back. You know, you did, you know, Hashem just happens to want to say hello, so Hashem can always, you know, Hashem's, you know, the Klahavdil, you know, the president supposedly, right, has all this, you know, there's this phone, you know, there's a certain general, you know, with the nuclear weapons, and they can always reach the president, they just have to lift it up when he's there. Right, so Hashem can always call anybody, right? But it wasn't like this relaxed, Hashem wanted to say hello. There was a different tone the Torah was basically telling us. Hashem was searching for them. Which, there was a certain tension, there was a certain anger, a certain disappointment, whatever. Hashem was searching for them. Whether, again, you use the imagery or the understanding of the coal traveling, or you think even more vividly, Hashem sort of stalking, looking for them. But it's clear, I agree with you, the Torah didn't have to tell us this. The fact that it went out of its way to tell us this, to me, tells me, I'm curious if you have another idea, I think that it means that the Torah wanted us to have that sense. You know, and again, it's a musr for life. You know, you do something wrong, Hashem's not just sitting back. Hashem is coming after you. You know, again, he cares. If he didn't care, he might be apathetic. But because he cares and he's disappointed, Hashem is going to pursue you. You're going to have to answer for this. You know, the old proverbial, you can run, but you can't hide on every possible level. Yeah.
I mean, I get the sense that he was announcing his presence to them.
Right.
Right,
I see. So, well, that we're gonna that is a good point. That is a good point, and in fact, we will see that certain mafarshim. In fact, there's a medrash the Rashi quotes that actually see that as some sense of awareness that he was coming, you know, or speak to them before he specifically got into the issue of, you know, it's like literally, it's almost like, you know, communications 101. How do you know you have whether it's a friend or an employee or somebody that you have to confront. You don't just like call them, you know, just like yelling at them. It's first, hi, how are you, how are you doing? And you know, you ease into it. And there's a certain derech eretz, a certain etiquette to that, both in terms of derech eretz and even sometimes in terms of strategic, which is more effective. So in fact, we'll see Rashi quotes from a tradition of Chazal that very much see it exactly this way, that he was bedavka, he wanted, so to speak, give them a sense that he was there before he, you know, gets into the nitty gritty. Take a look at the next source on your sheet. So those two opinions were a debate within Rashi. Just worth noting that the more predominant view in the other Mefarshim is clearly like the Medrash seems to say, like the simple understanding of Rashi, which is that it was the voice. For example, the Ibn Ezra in the fourth source says, the Yishma'u, you know, they call it Mishalech Bagan, what was it? Kol Hashem. It was the voice of Hashem. That was the one that was, you know, carrying. He points out that it was the evening. We'll get to that another point. And again, he gives us other proof texts, so you should know that this it's not an inappropriate use of the word of moving halicha to refer to that with the term of voice or sound. Come up. Kola kanacha sheleicha, pasuk from Yirmiyah, he says, or a well-known pasuk from Sefer Shmos, kol ha-shofar, right?
But something he quotes has as the verb of the kal, not the hisfayah.
Right, so that's because us. That's because I think clearly the Ibn Ezra, who lived before the Lavush, think he's clearly making the same assumption that the Lavush made, which was basically that the Maharal made up his own new rule of grammar.
Well, you know, the Lavush actually quotes the pasuk, meaning whom he could love. That's exactly what the pasuk says.
Right.
You know, he's quoting, he's sort of citing the pasuk, Ayoma Mihigid Lecha.
Right.
He's using the Lashon of the pasuk.
Right, right. Good observation. Take a look at the Radak. The Radak himself, as we'll see, also falls in line with this majority view. But the Radak at least quotes an opinion which is the third of the three possible suggestions that we suggested. We haven't seen that third one yet. The Radak tells us that there's this other opinion out there. Yesh Mefarshim, that what's this referring to? Shaya Adam Mishalech Bagan. And Adam was, you know, taking a stroll, you know, checking up on the garden. Shoma es kol Hashem Elokim. And then he heard the voice of Hashem. But as I don't remember, one of you, or maybe more than one of you, correctly pointed out, the Radak rejects this Perush, and he rejects it for the thing, the reason that one of you mentioned. And that is, if that's the case, V'achar she'amer v'yishmu, after we started off in the Lashon of plural in the beginning of the Pasuk, Harry, Hayolomer, says Radak, and if that's the case, it should have said Mishalachim, they were walking. Adam and Chava, the fact that it didn't, says Radak, means that this is not the correct shot, but rather Hanachon, Kita Mishalech al Kol Hashem, Kimitsana Bo Lashon Alicha. As Ibn Ezra said, as Rashi seems to say simply in the Medrash, they're referring to, again, it actually works perfectly. I don't know in other languages, when they've been studying these Mefarshim for centuries, if it works as perfectly as it does in English. But the idea of voice carrying is a very, almost an exact, you know, replica in idiomatic English for what I think they're trying to say, this idea that halicha is an appropriate term when it comes to kol. So, you mentioned, I think it was Harry also, that the art scroll, again, tell me again, how does the art scroll translate Mishalech?
Manifest.
That God's presence was manifest. So I believe, you'll take a look, you'll tell me what you think. I think that's coming from the Ramban. Yes, we'll take a question.
This is interesting. You know, my first translated as, and the voice of God was drawing itself in the garden.
Yeah, you know, something that's funny, I didn't know that Hirsch said that, but did he quote anyone for that? Or just himself. I saw that someone else said that also. I can't remember now who. And I didn't have a chance to see it inside. I just saw it quoted. And the part of the reason I quoted is that I wasn't sure I understood it. Because it seems clear from the Pasuk, it's definitely opposite this Ramban, but it seemed clear from the Pasuk that, of course, Hashem's presence is coming. So I don't, can I take a look at that for just 1 second? I'll read, where is it? I see. So the way he says it was that they heard the voice, but they heard the voice withdrawing itself. In other words, this is, we all know eventually that's where it's going to. Adam and Chava are going to get kicked out. So, huh? Yeah, I don't know. Okay, it's worth, I'll have to take a look maybe when we have more time. Okay, let's take a look at this Ramban. It's a very important Ramban. And he actually gives us some more sources. So first of all, he also quotes the same Medrash that Rashi was quoting, that Kol can walk. He tells us, the Ramban does, that so too ends of the first line, Kasav Harav B'mor Nevuchim. The Rambam and the Mor Nevuchim, says the Ramban, also has a similar explanation of this Pasuk, Chayin Das Rabbi Avram. Who's that? No, that's the Rambam's son. No, who, when the Ramban says Rabbi Avram, who is he referring to? The Ebenezra. And then he continues and says, Ki misalech kinui l'kol, that refers to a voice carrying, says the Ramban, Ulefi dati, my opinion, Ki ta misalech began Eden, the usage of the term misalech here in the Garden of Eden, Ki ta misalachti b'sochacham. It's the same imagery, the same meaning, as when Hashem says, v'hisalachti b'sochacham. And what does that mean? How does that pasuk in Vayikra? You have the stone chumash. Tell me, how did the article translate that pasuk? Vayikra 26:12. I'm just curious how they translate that. I will walk among you. Okay, so I think the Ramban has a little bit more of a broader understanding of that. Furthermore, okay, so we'll see what the Ramban thinks that means in a second. This is Rashi there makes the reference back. That's interesting. Good, I didn't know that. So, what's the next pasuk that the Ramban quotes? It's also from Vayera here in Bereishis in Parak Yotes, pasuk Lam Gimel. Vayelech Hashem, and Hashem departed. Kasher Kila Ledaber El Avram, when he had finished speaking to Avram. Avraham Shavlum Komo, and Avram returned to his place. So let's finish the Ramban. We're in the middle of the Ramban. So says, or he has any quotes of pasuk from the Navi Hoshea as well. Says the Ramban, what's the common thread in all of these three supporting psukim that he quoted? Hu inyan giloi shchina b'makom hahu o histal kuso min hamagom shenigla bo. The idea of when Hashem uses the term hishalech, or for that matter, again, he also blurs the line, like everyone but the Maral. Any form, any conjugation of that word with regard to Hashem, so it's referring to something more profound. It doesn't just mean there happened to be a voice, or there happened to not be a voice, something like that. What it means is, and again, what did you say, what did the article say? Man, here in our Pasuk? Right, I think that's this Ramban. In other words, Hashem was, again, it's the opposite, frankly, of this reverse. That God is, you know, if he was really far away generally, he's like coming, you know, the spotlight is now at Ramban Chava. He's coming down, he's mitzhalech, he's being manifest himself right in this, so to speak.
It's difficult to understand because the idea of his histalkus from with Hashem is inconceivable.
Right.
He's everywhere, Marco, he's everywhere.
Right.
So the notion of...
Right, but again, nevertheless, certainly, in the time of Tanakh, there's a notion of Hashem certainly coming close to people, and by definition, after he's finished being close, starts to be stepping away. So I think, as I understand this Ramban, and again, I think this might have been what the Stone Chumash, I guess, was alluding to, really is opposite, I guess, now of what the reverse seems, and again, I think someone else said that as well, as it seems that this is implying an intensification of Hashem's presence, so to speak, you know, like we would say, turning up the heat because of what's about to happen. Yeah.
Why is everybody trying?
Because I think, I don't know if so much, I think there's two answers to your question. Number one is that they're trying to understand the reference to Kol in this context. What does that mean? So that's, that they're struggling with. It doesn't say that, it doesn't just say Hashem was Mishalech. our pasuk says it was the kol. If you read it that way, it's the kol. So what? How do you put together sound or voice in that? And second of all, I think you're right, but that's not a question. That just kind of, so to speak, I think, explains it, and that is really an answer. Namely, even for example, b'zroin etuya, Hashem took us out after a storm. So it's not the question that we don't accept it. Although, as you may know, the Ravid of all people, right? He quotes that there were, quote, what he refers to as rabim v'tovim, not only many people, but people greater than the Rambam. That's his description. Rabim v'tovim mimcha, says the Ravid, who took these anthropomorphisms literally. The Ravid himself says that he doesn't believe that Hashem has a body, but when the Rambam says that anyone who believes that Hashem has a body is a heretic, the Ravid says, you know, they may be mistaken, but they're going to be making a mistake in being a heretic. After all, says the Ravid, Rabim v'tovim believed it. That's a witness testimony of the Ravid. It's not that he believed it's anthropomorphic. So you're right. Of course, we'll assume it doesn't mean that God had an outstretched arm, so to speak, you know, swooping up the Jewish people and taking them out of Egypt. But the Torah says, use it as a mushal, anthropomorphic. But Seymour, we still have to. It still begs the question. So if it doesn't mean it literally, why did the Torah use any mushal or dafka this mushal? What message is being implied, whether it's more on the surface or even more subtly, by the specific choice of image? Like you said, there are multiple possible anthropomorphisms, multiple possible euphemisms. So why in one context is the kol, in one context is Hashem's voice, and in one context is his outstretched arm? And so there are always mafarshim who are pointing out that the specific choice of anthropomorphism, you know, is saying something. So again, I think that's why, again, I'm trying to understand this in that vein. Namely, if it is the kol, so then what is that image, what's the message is trying to be evoked? And if it's according to the opinion, as we saw from the Maral, that it's Hashem himself, you have to just jungle around the words a little bit, but it's Hashem himself, what image, I think that there's still something that's important and relevant from that. Okay, yes.
That's what he refers to, his stock.
Right, yes, because there Hashem is departing.
And maybe that's what Rav Hirsch was referring to also. In other words...
Right, you see, his halakh can refer to that also.
Leaving
right, okay, good, right. You know, in Hanami, the Ramban says it's like a two-way, street. It's like up and down escalator. It just means there's a transference of Hashem's presence, either away... Right, okay, good. Now let's take a look. I mentioned that there's a Rashi that speaks about etiquette and Derech Eretz. To take a look at which Rashi do I want to see? Let's hold off on that for a second. Yeah, 1 second. Yeah, you know what? I think I mixed up the sources on the sheet. Go back for a moment to the previous Rashi, L'ruach Hayom, the issue of when it was, right? So the Torah uses this term, L'ruach Hayom, which the Mefarshim seem to refer to as evening. So look at the Rashi, second Rashi on the pasuk, L'ruach Hayom, L'oso Ruach, towards the direction, Shashemesh Ba'al Hashem, to which, or from which the sun had come. What does that mean? Zuhi Maravis, right? Sets in the west. Shalifnos Erev Chama B'Marav, as the day turns to night, the sun is in the west. V'heim Sarchu Ba'asiris. Says Rashi, alluding to a famous Chazal, when did all of this happen? Not just that Hashem showed up in the evening. Who needs to know that? But rather, Hashem showed up right away. But they sinned in the evening. What is Rashi referring to? So if you take a look at the bottom of the sheet, a very famous Maimar Chazal, which gives you basically the itinerary by the hour, by Mamash, a social planner, of Adam and Chava on the first day. How did the first day go for Adam and Chava? According to this tradition, which Rashi invokes, had a very, very busy day. Take a look. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Bar Chanina, last line on the page. Shteim Esrei Shos Hevi B'Yom. We know that the halachic calendar divides up the whole sun, from sunrise to sunset, into 12 even hours. Let's assume it's a 6 to 6 day. That makes it easy for us. So 12 hours from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 6 a.m., Rishonu, in the first hour, Hutzvar Afro. Hashem was gathering the dirt from which he would then make Adam. Shnia, in the second hour, Na'ase Golem. Right. He took that, and we've seen this notion that Adam was created in two stages. First, he was a lifeless clump of dirt. Shlishis, in the third hour, in Tachu Evarov, right, then this clump of dirt is more refined into specific limbs and organs. Revius in the fourth hour, Nizrak Abod Neshama, then it becomes, Hashem breathes into him the Nishmas Chaim, Adam comes to life. Chamishis in the fifth hour, Amar Araglav, this living clump is now standing up. Shishis in the sixth hour, Kara Shemos, he's going around telling the, busy day, it's already afternoon, I missed all, it's a busy day at work, I got a lot to do, says Adam. So he's running around giving the names to all the animals. Shivius, in the seventh day, Nizdavga lo Chava, Chava is created, he meets up with his wife. Shmeh, so he had how many hours of freedom? I didn't say pleasure, I said freedom. Okay. Shmeis, the next hour, Olo Lamita Shnayim, they went to bed just as two. The Yardu Arba, and apparently, even if intimate relations were identical as they are today, there was no, as we know, there was no long painful pregnancy or even delivery, right? In some very quick way, at most it took an hour, says this Rash, says the Gemara, right? All of a sudden, the two boys are Cain and Hevel. Are born. Chiyus in the ninth hour. Nitzavishlo leechol mina ilan. According to here, again, it's interesting with the chronologies. According to the Gemara, only then are they commanded not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. And within 1 hour, the next hour, Asiris Sarah. Right then, they are already sinning and they're already eating from the tree. Achasis rei nidon. The 11th hour. It's almost cliche. In the 11th hour. Right? And it works out beautifully. The 11th hour is the judgment. That's what we're reading now. And Shtemisrei, in the 12th hour, at the end of the day, they're thrown out of the garden.
The only thing that's very confusing is the 8th hour. The Kain and Hevel.
Right. Because we don't know.
The fussing has later.
Yeah, we... Right, so we have not been told about those two guys yet. Those rascals. Well, you know what it was. Adam and Chava were going to get in trouble, right? Chava is no, so she probably sent them, you go play with the crocodiles or something. You go over there. Pick up some oranges.
Also,
right. It's interesting. Yeah, but it is interesting to note. It is interesting. Yeah, you wouldn't necessarily know that, but that's the tradition that this Gemara has, and Rashi is invoking that Medrash. Now, getting back to the point, if you turn back over your page, so we saw again that the Torah tells us again, now that we know that it's in the evening. Yeah. Yes.
Everybody was born as adults.
That sounds like a kind of. Listen, let's put it this way. Whatever their physical characteristics were, they are considered adult to the point that they're considered responsible for their actions. I think it's even more significant that obviously that they're considered morally culpable as an adult. Considered. So, we saw, it was mentioned before, that the Torah has kind of, if you want to look at it this way, the Torah has an introductory pasuk of announcing Hashem. Presence, the kol, if we want to refer to it as that, or Hashem himself, is mishalech begun, right? It's only in the next pasuk, Tessa, where Hashem actually talks to them and says, Ayaka. So if you take a look for a moment, there are two sources that indicate the significance of this. The first is Rashi on pasuk Yud. Rashi on pasuk Yud, Ayaka, Yodea Hayaka, right? They knew Hashem, of course, knew where they were. Shalom, Likanis Ima Bedvarim. Rather, Hashem does it this way, Likanis Ima Bedvarim. First, to start a conversation, make a little small talk. Shalom Yehei Nivhal Hashiv. So they wouldn't be too startled. The first thing they hear is, why did you eat? Or get out of my garden. They're going to be too freaked out by that. They're going to get too nervous. They're going to be Nivhal Mimeno. So Hashem starts off with Machiv Ima Bedvarim. He makes a little small talk. Im Yanishenu Pitom. Which he didn't want to. He wanted to avoid punishing him too suddenly. And the Rashi points out that this is not the only time. We'll have it shortly thereafter. V'chein b'kayin. So to Kayin, Amar lo, he said to him, "Ei hevel achicha." Again, Hashem of course knew where hevel is. It's a very interesting parallel. Ayeka and ayeh hevel achicha. Right? In both cases, of course, Hashem knows it. But according to this tradition, in both cases, he does it the first week, set them at ease before he drops the hammer, as opposed to trying to do it beforehand. And then he mentions that this happens in the Navi Chizkiyahu as well. Take a look for a moment, just at the second to last source on the front page, the Radak. The Radak also has this idea, and borrowing from the same Chazal, there's what's known as the Mesechtos Ketanos, the minor tractates. So one of them is known as Mesechtos Derech Eretz. exactly therein. So there's a tradition which teaches what Rashi alluded to, and in fact the Radak mentions this as well. And the Radak pushes it back a pasuk. Rashi makes this point on the actual Vayeka, but I think the Radak is really more in line with what was mentioned before, which is that perhaps even the Mishalech HaKol, the sounds they heard, already prepared them even for Ayeka, which itself in turn prepared them for the interrogation. Says the Radak, V'hatam shehishmielam HaKol, Kodem HaDibor. So the Radak, again, you asked Terry, we don't know the answer, even the Radak doesn't tell us, but the Radak does say that you have to look at these as two separate things. First, they heard a voice or a sound of Hashem, and then they heard Ayeka. That's clear that the Radak sees it as two steps. Until now, we thought maybe it was only one. Here, the Radak says it's clear. It's clearer in the Radak. It was two things. And the Radak says it was done purposefully. Why? Because Hashem wanted to give them advance notice that he was coming, so they would, so to speak, run and hide. Says the Radak, again, based on this tradition, Chazal, that Rashi alluded to, teaching us universal etiquette, derech eretz. Gam lim de Torah, derech eretz. The Torah is teaching us how to be a mensch, derech eretz. For all times, we should know, shelo yikanes adam el chavero pitom. You shouldn't walk in on someone unannounced. You shouldn't come up on somebody suddenly. El yashmiya kol tchili. You should first let them know you're coming. Oh, it's almost charming and quaint the way they describe it. In folk aladelas, knock on the door. Shema osa davret sneas bebeso. Maybe they're not dressed properly. They're doing something, you know, which may be appropriate, but not appropriate for you to witness. So therefore, first knock, let them know you're coming. And again, just you should know, this is brought down not only in Sarvotra, even in Halacha, even to your husband and a wife. Even when you're coming into your own house, you should, so to speak, you know, give it, you're allowed to open the door. You don't have to wait for someone to answer the door, but you should give them a little knock. You shouldn't barge in on people, even in your own home, let alone with other people. Yeah.
They didn't say what he did and all of that. If they had immediately said...
Accept responsibility
for this time frame. If they did immediately accept responsibility, if they did tshuva...
Right. Would it have helped?
Have been,
I don't know.
Does anybody
agree? I don't know. We're not up to that yet.
No.
Okay? let's keep it in mind. That's going to be the next... our next year. That's in 2 weeks. That'll be our next year to discuss those psukim. Existentially. I don't know if any of the earlier Mefarshim say that, but that's like a classic rabbinical drush, you know, that I can almost hear myself saying it. I don't know if I've ever done this drush, but like every rabbi, you know, every man and woman has to ask themselves this question in life. It's when the God always asks, Ayeka, where are you? Where are you holding? Right. I'm sure I've heard it. Maybe even given the drush already in my sleep. I'm just waiting for the moment. Okay, so now let's take a look at the last point on this pasuk, and then we'll see a few minor points on the other pasukim. The last point on this pasukim, which is a very, again, in a certain sense it's a picayune detail, but I think it's actually a fascinating one, and that is the end of the pasuk, eights. It only refers to the singular tree. So you mentioned to me, somebody called out, that it was the article translates it, you know, as plural. Where does the article get that from? The Radak. Look at the next source on your sheet. Eitz Hagan. Eitz is derech klal. Don't take it so literally. It means generally. Rotzalomer, that is to say, Atzei Hagan. It means the trees. Okay, you know, don't, just relax. And basically what it means is that Adam and Chava were hiding in the tree, in between the trees. And as you know, you imagine a helicopter is looking ahead, you know, and the fugitive is hiding in between the trees or something. They were at camouflage. They were looking for cover. They were hiding in between the trees. Betoch Atzei Hagan is the understanding. However, the Abarbanel, I don't know if anyone else says this, but the Abarbanel says, no, it means it very, very specific. Siper HaKosov, the Torah tells us, Kasher Chota Adam, when Adam sinned, and again you see that there's a lot of, there's extra culpability to Adam, even though it was Chava who got him, because others point out, because he's the one who directly heard it from Hashem, so he should have known better. But what is the Torah, but again it's true, of course, applies to Chava also, but its focus of the criticism is on Adam. Namely, there's this idea, Nis'alma mimenu ha-halacha. Which halacha here doesn't mean halacha in the way we use the term. It means basically common sense escaped him. In other words, which is basically the idea with Chazal and other places say, Einar mechote el imim nechnas ba ruach shtos, right? There's a certain temporary insanity that we all undergo so that we do things that we know are wrong. Says the Abarbanel, it's so extreme in certain cases, kol kach uba kol kach, you can go all the way, lidei sichlus, you can become mamish like a fool, you can say stupidity, ad shemil ulibo, until you could even contemplate, Right? You asked, how could Adam and Chava do it? Rabbi Ben-El says, yes, in their mind, their temporary suspended reality, they thought, you know, they were so panicked. Let's hide from Hashem, quick, let's hide. Of course it makes no sense. Says the Rabbi Ben-El, that just goes to show you the power of sin and the power of paranoia, so to speak. You can make you even think things that are obviously and from a distance ridiculous. So you think you're going to hide from Hashem? So once he says that, says the Rabbi Ben-El, he continues and he says something so insightful, really interesting. Ki im, so where did they taka hide after they somehow managed they could hide from Hashem? Pesoch eight sagan, says the Rabbi Ben-El, in distinction and contrast to the Radak. But osoha eight hayadua shechato. Not just all the trees, some euphemistic tree. They were hiding maybe literally in or at least behind or under the tree, the Eitz Hadas they sinned with. Umipnei, and so again, imagine the picture. Now again, this furthers the point, which is I think why the Rabbi Ben-El makes it, which is, if you get your hand caught in the cookie jar, you know, where are you going to hide? As far away from the cookie jar as possible, right? You wouldn't, you know, your mother told you, you know, don't eat from the cookies, and all of a sudden you get your hand in the cookie jar when you hear, you know, the key is turning, so you're gonna, you know, you're rumbling off the crumbs off your lips, and where are you going to be? You're not going to just be standing to the cookie jar when your mom walks in, hi, right? You're going to run into some other room and pretend you're reading or doing something, right? So does it make any sense? They know they did wrong. Hashem's coming after them, and where are they hiding of all places? Says the Rabbi Ben-El, in the scene of the crime. Further evidence, again, this is implied, but this is clearly what the Rabbi Ben-El's train of thought is. Further evidence of how crazy you have to become, or everything with them is magnified. The Rabbi Ben-Chava, it is the Garden of Eden, after all. Not exactly, 2006 or 2007 Baltimore. Right, everything is more intensified, but again, there's a certain kernel of truth that we can all relate to. Says the Rabbi Ben-El, this is how crazed they had become, not only to lead them to sin, but even in the immediate aftermath, they're making what are obviously completely irrational or even counterproductive decisions. And in light of all that, just this is the way the Rabbi Ben-El, so to speak, reads the next psukim, where Hashem calls out to them, the Ayeka psukim, and the next psukim, which we saw, where Hashem says, what are you guys doing there? Says the Rabbi Ben-El, Amr lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'tchilas dvarav. Hashem starts off by saying to them, Ayeka, namely, Shehi Mila HaTorah al HaMakom. That's a phrase he's asking on their geographical location. Where are you? So says the Rabbi Ben-El, last line, Kolomer, that means to say, Halo Yadata Eza Makom Ata Yoshev. Don't you know? Obviously you know where you happen to be. Malachapo, what are you doing there? Of all places, what you just happen to be by that tree? Ome Betoch Osa Eitz. And again, the way he puts it, it sounds like they actually were climbed into the tree. They're just hiding behind you. What are you doing climbing up into the branches of the Eitz Hadas? After all, isn't that a little risky? Shema Elecho Mimenu. But could you be going there because you want to eat from that tree? Right? It's like the sarcasm is dripping. Right? This is how the Abba, he's mamish, he's getting them. And again, it's not that far off. It's just an added oomph. But again, remember, what did the Pasuk itself say? The Pasuk itself says, Vayikra Hashem, Pasuk Tes. Vayikra Hashem Elokim with Adam, Vayomer, I'm sorry, Pasuk Yod. Vayomer, Eschof Hashem, one second. I meant Yerav. Vayomer, Mi Gidlecha, Ki Romata, Hamina, Eitz, Asher, Tivisicha, Levilti, Achom, Emeno, Chalta. So in the Pasuk itself, Hashem is asking rhetorically, what, did you eat from the tree when you say that you know you're naked? Like, how else do you know this? But the Rabbi Ben-El adds that train of thought, that type of questioning from Hashem happened even before that. Right? That was after they responded. Again, the dialogue which the Rabbi Ben-El is filling in is one step before the Pasuk we just read. As he just found them, Ayeka, and already in Ayeka, the Rabbi Ben-El reads in, so to speak, the certain bitnia, we call it, a certain rhetorical or almost even sarcasm, that the Torah itself seems to employ in Pasuk Yud-Alef. The Rabbi Ben-El puts that back already in an earlier statement by Hashem in the Pasuk before. As Hashem is, he's ruthless with them. And we all know, if you come out and just yell at someone right away, that's actually much more merciful. When you know that the person knows, you're fearful that they know, and they're kind of, waiting, drawing it out sometimes if you're, a disciplinarian, you put the person more on edge. Like, you just want them to yell at you already and just tell you, yeah, I know you did. But Hashem is, again, in the Pasuk itself, Hashem is toying with them to a certain extent. And then Rabbi Ben-El adds an even earlier example of this, which again, it almost gives you a sense of how upset Hashem must have been at them. And it also would really give you a sense of how fearful Adam and Chava must have been. It's like, just come out and tell us we're in trouble already. Give us our patch. But Hashem is, the tension, is building.
It adds to a level of disappointment when you instead of yelling at someone right
away. Right, yeah, it's more, yeah, because it's more effective. Right, it's more.
Done something.
Right. What would you possibly be doing there? I mean, could it be to eat from that? I mean, that would never be. Right, exactly. Oh, well, of course, you know they did, right? You're setting them up for an even more biting criticism. Let's just see two more sources, and then we'll call it a night. The Sephorno has a different approach. The Ayeka says the Barbanel is simply understood, where are you? And again, like we said, of course Hashem knows where you are. So we either had the famous rabbinic, you know, the sermonic, you know, existential question, Ayeka, where are you holding? Or we saw the Barbanel who said, no, he meant it literally, but of course it's absurd. But the point was, Adam and Chava were thinking ridiculously. They were thinking they could hide. So to speak, Hashem is calling them on that absurdity. And then a third approach now we see from the Sephorno. The Sephorno says Ayeka does not mean, where are you, like, you know, are you in 2209 or 2210? It's not what Hashem meant. Rather, Ayeka means she'ein chanira began kmeaz. You look different. It's on your face, so to speak. You look different. She'nichbe yisur she'nichbas ata v'lo asisa kan mikodem. Meaning you're hiding. Of course, I see you and I see you hiding. Now, you never had to do that before. You know, what is going on? And again, it makes it so, almost as if we can relate to this. It makes it very real. Because again, what happens when we're guilty? Unless you're really good, it's on your face. Right? It's on your face, right? If you're really good at this, you should work for the CIA. You know, but for most of us, you know, NSA with Harry Rauschbaum, covert operations, you can't tell us about that, I know, Harry. We appreciate the duty you did to our country. Okay, so that's the Forno says that's what Ayeka was. It's like, what is going on? Your behavior has changed. Now, finally, just to mention, so what was the last thing here in Pasuk Yud? What does the Adam and Chava say? Again, just who has a question on this? Let's finish with this. So Adam responds to the question of Ayeka with, oh, you know, I heard your voice. Here you're looking for us. The Ira, I was afraid, ki Ira Manochi, because I'm naked, ve'echaved efer I hid. So what's the problem with that description?
Because they had the...
Didn't they just get dressed? Didn't you see my pictures last week? Right? Didn't I look cute? Right? They were dressed, no? So it's just a cute little, or just a simple point, but the Chizkuni is the one who makes it. He says in the last source, it's true that they already put on their loincloth, they already got dressed. Yishlomer, you see from this, Shema, or apparently you have to suggest, Shema lo kiso ela baser eva levad. They literally had it only in their most private parts of their body, but otherwise they were still unclothed. And what's striking or interesting to me about this Chizkuni is that it's arguing on the Medrash we saw last week. The Medrash, right, where the Pasuk, where it describes that they did the clothing, it calls Chagoros, right, which is in plural. So we thought, you know, the Pashto says you could understand that just euphemistically. Just like here, eight singular was understood euphemistically as multiple. So sometimes but we had seen that the Medrash said, no, that each one of them had three very specific garments that were more fully clothed according to the Medrash. But again, according to that Medrash, I didn't think about that then, but in light of this Pasuk, Taka, it's a good question on that Medrash, so why are they saying Ki Yirom Anochi? So maybe the answer is, and again, I didn't see anyone who says this, I don't even know if the Barbanel says this, but maybe you could explain, if you had to defend this Pasuk according to that Medrash, after all, they're pretty much fully clothed, so how come I'm here saying I'm naked? So maybe the answer would be, once again, it's another example of the Barbanel's theory, and that is that they were so discombobulated, they were saying all sorts of incoherent things. Right, so he's saying, you know, as the Barbanel told us, first of all, you think you can hide, so that's already like a bizarre. And once you're already on that level, so what's this, you know, I'm afraid because I'm naked. No, you're not. Oh, right. Well, I'm afraid. Like, maybe that's the answer according to the Medrash. But Chizkuni says more simply, you know, like, who said they were so dressed? Even then, they weren't dressed in a way that you would otherwise, you know, want to be seen by Hashem. Let's leave it at that. Any more questions? Okay. Emir Hashem, enjoy your week off.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I